And as we share unity's prayer of light together, I'm going to suggest that we all get a sense of being connected with one another. We are not occupying the same physical space. But in a way, through our intention, through our willingness, through our ability to go beyond our five senses, that we are touching and being touched by one another. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. The power of God protects us. And the presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is. And all is well. Especially hold those in the light this morning who might be victims of aggression or violence, whether that is on the physical or emotional scale of things. And know that our hearts are open in desiring that all beings be at peace. And actually remembered to push the record button. So all of you who are waiting to remind me, you can let go of that one for a moment. I'd like to begin by just opening things up. Is there anything that anybody in reading the material this week or in your own spiritual practice has come to any other or deeper kinds of either awareness or questions or things you want to be able to clarify in your own mind and heart? Yeah, Jim.
Yeah, I was been so waiting just to ask you this question. This came through this week for me in my practice. And the question is, with respect to cause and effect, do you think that principle or that concept is understood or known by the collective masses or the consciousness, the prevailing consciousness? And I say that only because to me it is a very simple sort of principle or concept in terms of thoughts create actions, actions create doings. I guess that's the question. And the question is, are humankind able to check themselves, or do they even want to check themselves, or are they even clearly, do they understand the notion of cause and effect and how that works and how that's created different sort of things in their own individual lives?
Okay. Thank you. Anybody want to jump in on that one? By the way, I am not some great guru who has all the answers. I'm mucking through this is just like everybody else is. Just that I talk a lot. Metaphysically, we would say that everything begins with thought. And that thought is the beginning of creative action. So what you think, you create. That's just the simplest way I can put it, all right? And to resonate with Jim's question is, are most of us in attune with that or aligned with that wouldn't even call with that thought, with that energy. Another metaphysical principle, a simple one, is that energy follows thought. In other words, it begins with thought, and then energy is created from thought. And that's the energy of what we might call the energy of creation. The beginning of John's gospel, in the beginning was the Word, is a very simple, profound way of defining that whole principle. Everything comes from that. That thought, that if we want to call it that original idea. Now, are most of us aware of that? Probably not. It's much easier to blame other people or blame circumstances for my for the world that I live in than it is to take responsibility for it. So it's easy on one side of the thing to say, well, I am creating a loving, peaceful world. And then look around and see it's all sick and violence and people going crazy and shooting one another. Well, here's where the difficulty lies, is I created that too. Not personally, I mean, it's not Jerry Boylan going out there creating violence. But the violence that is projected out there and the violence that I see is created by, let's say, the disparity or the violence or the struggle within me. If there was no, here's something that I find very difficult to grasp. Maybe I'm not even supposed to grasp it, but I believe it's true. If I was completely at peace, I would see no war. I would see no imbalance. I would see no inequality. I would be like that wonderful image that I go back to periodically. I would be like Thomas Merton on the corner of 4th and Walnut, seeing everybody as beings of light. Or I would be Mother Teresa saying, you know, my basic job here on earth is to see Christ in all his distressing disguises. What a beautiful statement that is. To see the Christ in all his distressing disguise. In other words, to see beyond, to see through the disguises and say, that's just a mask. That's not that. I see the Christ. It's coming through loud and clear, even though, you know, you might be looked upon as being hurtful, angry, obnoxious, child molester, all right, murderer, whatever. Okay, I see through that. That's not who you are. Now that brings us really to what the theme of today is all about. Because I started reading over this chapter again. And I must confess that this is partly me too, is that I kind of got lost in talking about some things and missed the major thrust of what this chapter is all about. The title of the chapter is How to Witness. And you might recall we started off by talking about this aspect of yourself, this aspect of self with a capital S that can be expressed in various ways. But this aspect of self that is sometimes referred to as the observer or the witness. And that is the part of you and me that is awake enough to become aware of what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, and also kind of works on a pivot where when I discover or discover for myself the what and the why and the wherefore I am doing or thinking something is that I don't want to do it that way. Oh, well, then I get presented with some possibilities of doing it differently. As the Course in Miracles talks about, choose once again, choose differently. I have to be aware enough to recognize that I have a choice. And that awareness is a reflection or comes from that aspect of self that we sometimes refer to as the observer or as the witness. So in other words, if I am awake enough or aware enough, is I can say, here's Jerry. There's a famous story about this, about a mystical friend of the teacher Gurdjieff. His name was Uspensky. And Uspensky was doing this practice, it's called the work, this practice in awareness. And so the moment he would wake up, he would say, here's Uspensky waking up, tangled up in the sheets, right, getting up out of bed. Here's Uspensky taking a shower, thinking about wanting a cup of coffee, all right? And he would follow himself through a day like that. Very, very zen, all right? Very zen in terms of awareness. And as the story goes, as he was very consciously aware of practicing this particular form of spiritual awareness, he looked down the street as he was walking down the street, and he saw his tobacconist shop. And the thought came to him is, oh, I'm running out of pipe tobacco. He immediately, with that thought of attachment, my attachment to my pipe tobacco, he immediately lost his sense of awareness. And now he was focused on walking to the store and getting my pipe tobacco. And it wasn't until about 2 or 3 days later that he realized that he had lost his focus. He became so wrapped up in just the daily living of things, just like we do, right? That he lost his connection to that, to let's call it our spiritual center, that place of awareness. There's another famous Zen story about this student who is going to see his master for the last time. He had finished his 7 years of study. And he was going to a tea ceremony that his master was having for him that was sort of his Zen graduation. He could become a master or a teacher himself. And so he was all wrapped up in this, looking forward to this being made a master. And of course, in the Buddhist tradition, as well as some other spiritual traditions, you leave your sandals at the door. You walk in the house, you walk in the room barefoot, which he did. And he knelt down in front of the little table where the master was making the tea. And the master looked at him and said, which side of the door did you put your sandals on, the right or the left? And he went, oh shit, okay, I can't remember. And the master said, I think you need 7 more years of study. Just take a look at ourselves. And again, this is not, we don't want to turn this into judgment. This is not making us do something. But, you know, I become aware of walking through my day. And here's where it's at. Here's what the reading is going to talk about here. Every moment is a choice of making every moment into an act of love. The Course in Miracles will tell us there are no neutral actions. Okay? Everything is either an act of love or a cry for help. And for the most part, my indifference or my unawareness is a cry for help because I'm not connected, or I'm just connected to my own sense of, my own limited sense of self. So here we are this morning, gathered together in different places around the city or around the country, with only one basic purpose. And that is to become more aware. And to know that in our, quote, individual awareness, if there is such a thing, in my individual awareness, I am expanding the awareness of all beings. Nothing is held apart from that. So your work on yourself, my work on myself, benefits everyone and everything. my ability or my willingness to see beyond my five senses, or to see beyond the violence or the disease that the world is showing me, that affects all beings. It has to. It can't not. That's really interesting. Some people are just beginning to sign in. You know, and we're not making a judgment about that one. But what I want you to realize is that you're not late. You didn't forget anything. The spirit guides, the guides who are dictating this material, who dictated it to Paul, who are working to and through us this morning, are reminding us that whatever is going on in your life, whether you think you're late, early, or in between, it's all perfect. It's all part of your learning. It's grist for the mill. It's not something wrong or something bad or, you know, you have to do a do-over with. It's none of that. So in the midst of all of this work we're doing for ourselves and for one another, the one of the primary dictates is, above all, be gentle with yourself. Jill.
Just this morning, in my reading of Thich Nhat Hanh, I thought this was appropriate. We can't afford to love for less than 24 hours a day.
Say that again, please.
We can't afford to love for less than 24 hours a day.
And where does that begin? It begins with our willingness and our intention. That's why many of us will start off the morning with a meditation. And if you can't do, you know, your 15 or 20 minutes, do 30 seconds. Do the serenity prayer. Do Unity's prayer of light. Or say, you know, say very simply, God, I don't know the answer, you do, show me. Let me be open, let me be aware. And if I forget, let me even embrace my forgetfulness as being a lesson to me that I can learn from. So when I come to the end of the day, I'm not dwelling on what I forgot. I'm grateful that I got here.
Hey, Jerry.
Yo.
When you say that, I remember years and years ago, I don't know, maybe it's not years and years ago, and I don't know if you ever heard this one, that, oh, so God is a crutch to you. When it was said, it obviously wasn't meant to be very nice. It was just more like, oh, you can't handle the rigors of life situations on your own, so you have to have a crutch, you know. And I think they did refer to it as God. And I say that only because that, for me, that surrendering piece is a moment by moment sort of thing. And as I, like you said, as I go out into this life game, having meditated, having done the practice, here comes a pothole of life that once to or off times distracts me from my intention for the day.
We're also presuming with something like that. I ran across that too, God is a crutch. And when I first came across that was when I began my process of recovery from addiction. And I remember I sort of laughed at that one, God is a crutch. I said, well, I don't really care because I need a crutch right now, okay? And in a way, it was kind of funny. But I realized later on that this is another example of the language of separateness. Right? That I'm here and God's over there someplace. And God's saying, here's a crutch, Jerry. And I'm saying, no, that's not the case here. The case here is that I am becoming more and more aware, not only of leaning on my divine self, which I will do sometimes, but recognizing that what we're calling the divine self or the Christ consciousness is much more a closer definition of the truth of who I am. And see, when I'm there, Jill's expression, which I think is beautiful, you can't afford, you know, to love less than 24 hours, right? That's simply a reminder to my personality self to get the hell out of the way. Because my personality self can't do that. And my divine self is not beating the hell out of my personality here. It's saying, oh, wait a minute, that's just not who you are. Here, move over here. You're blocking the light. Let the light shine through. Oh, okay. You're not doing anything wrong. You're just standing in a place that's blocking the lights. Move over here. I'm not getting rid of you. You're always going to be around. As long as I'm here, I'm going to have you. You're part of the structure of my existence. I created you. I created you as one, as my best and my closest teacher. And that's all I need to recognize about you. You are not who I am, but you're constantly teaching me stuff. Either stuff to let go of, or stuff to work on, or stuff to be gentle with, or stuff to be aware of. One of the Ram Dass story here of when he was touring the country, which he did many, many times, giving lectures in all of these little town halls and school gymnasiums and churches. And he said he had very few requirements. One of the things he would ask for is that he would like to have a boom microphone, because he used to like to sit on a couple of cushions in sort of a lotus position, and so he could talk into this microphone that could be lowered and put level with his mouth, and he wouldn't have to stand up or do anything else. And so that was just one of the few requirements that he had for speaking. And so he was in Kansas City or some other place, and the little entourage was showing him around, and they brought him to this hall where he was going to be speaking. And here was the stand-up microphone. And he said, up until that point, he said, everything was groovy. I was feeling fine. I was being blessed, and I was happy, and I was being this wonderful, nice, centered human being. And all of a sudden, I see this stand-up microphone, and I go, what's that? And he said, as soon as I did that, as soon as I became angry, as soon as I got off center, he said, I could hear my guru in the back of my mind, named Karuli Baba, which is also another expression of his divine self, sort of chuckling, saying, gotcha, right? You got hooked by a microphone. Obviously, you thought that's who you were. What hook? I got hooked this morning. My internet wasn't working, or wasn't working well. Oh my God, what's going to happen? Nobody's going to be online. What are they going to think about me? Oh, here we are. What are you going to think about me? Is that who I am? Who you are? Do you make me into something? Or do I make me into something? Can I even make myself into something? But I can think I can make myself into something. I am on page 192. Does that sound right? Now, keep in mind that one of the things we don't talk about this a whole lot, but we are reading from a book, obviously, that was written maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And we are reading it like somebody wrote this 5 or 6 years ago. But what we are being asked to do is to go beyond what our five senses are telling us and to recognize that the words that are spoken here and the energy behind those words, the subliminal message, the om, the energy, the subliminal sound, vibration behind the words is going on right now. The guides are just as present with us in this moment as they were with Paul when this was being dictated 5 or 6 years ago. Right now, the song is being sung right now. It's not like, oh, isn't that nice? They were singing this song 5 or 6 years ago. Isn't that wonderful? It's being sung right now. If you were to consciously, let's say, listen to a piece of music. Let's suppose after class is over, you decide to, I'd really like to listen to some music. Maybe you're drawn to, let's say, I might be drawn to classical music once in a while, which I am. So let's suppose I decide to listen to The Emperor, Beethoven's 5th Piano Concerto, which always knocks my socks off, okay? Let's suppose I decide to listen to that. Well, when I listen to it, I'm not saying, well, this was a piece written by Beethoven, 150 years ago. No. That music and I am present to that music in that moment. It is just as magical in that moment as it was maybe 50 or 75 years ago. It doesn't have anything to do with when it was written, it's now. So I'm wondering if we can take that same sort of consciousness into our reading, into what we are doing here and now. This is now. This wasn't written yesterday or 5 or 6 years ago. This is written now. And the vibration behind it, the subliminal vibration underneath, is going on right now. The song is being sung. The orchestra is playing right now. So we're not studying something that's in or from the past. It's right here, right now. The orchestra is playing already, They've already warmed up. Do you ever hear an orchestra warming up? Right? All of this cacophony and everybody's playing something different and somebody's tuning over here and somebody's doing it. And it seems like it's just noise. But it's getting ready for something. The orchestra is already ready. The orchestra is playing already, We are singing through Paul. We are singing through the world in what ways we can, and you are singing as well. This is not a passive exercise. You're not sitting there listening to something. You are vibrating. You're choosing to be attuned to whatever is going on in your life at a higher frequency. You are already in immanence, higher consciousness. You are already in consciousness. Your vibration is already calling your reality to you. So the significant change, we say, is the intention. I see all that I see before me in love correlates to an expression of love in all that you see before you. Everything. The home you are living in. Your front yard, your backyard. The place where my shower is leaking. It's not perfect. The place you're living in is probably not perfect either. I've got a bucket on the floor. It shouldn't be there. My shower shouldn't be leaking. Should be perfect. But you know what? Then I'd start worrying about something else. Not that you would ever do that. But I don't know about you, if I'm not obsessed with one thing, I'm going to be obsessed with something else. So here I am being called. What am I going to focus on? Am I going to focus on this one little minuscule? 99.9% of my home is working perfectly. And this 0.1% is not working. It's not flooding anything. There's a bucket under there that's catching the water. Somebody's coming along is going to fix it. They haven't fixed it yet. They haven't been successful yet, but they're going to be. Do I have to end my world with that 0.0001% that I am so diligently focused on? Or can I be grateful for the other 99.9? Jerry played this. Well, I can't be happy unless... dot, dot, dot. Did you ever do that one? What is that? What does that do to our happiness? I can't enjoy myself unless dot, 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 dot. I had a favorite story about that. When Margo and I were living in our former home, when we first moved in, being the compulsive being that I am, I created this cleaning schedule. It's a big house. It was a tri-level house. It was a lot of room for two people. And so one of the things I was going to do, I was going to do the kitchen. Margo was going to do the living room. Living room was easy. There's a vaulted ceiling, big fireplace. All you had to do was dust off some things. Kitchen was a little bit more of a hassle because you had all, you know, the sinks and the countertops and all the other stuff. Well, it was interesting. In the kitchen, because it was a tri-level house, I could look over the railway and I could look down and see Margo in the living room. So I'm diligently doing whatever I'm doing in the kitchen, shining up this and cleaning out the sink and cleaning out the garbage disposal and cleaning stuff off the floor and making sure that the refrigerator's in, you know, is everything is findable in the refrigerator and all kinds of other stuff. And I say to myself, I wonder how Margo's doing. And I look over the side and she's sitting on the couch reading Time magazine. And I was ready to explode. And I tried to swallow my anger and I said, what are you doing? And she said, I'm pausing. I said, you're pausing? She said, yeah. I did some of my work and I'm taking a break and I'm reading a magazine. Well, in my mind, you can't read Time magazine unless you get the living room finished. Who says? My list. Can I hear the orchestra playing? They're playing my song. Well, I can't hear the orchestra until I do this. Now, this is not just something that the individual does to change her own perception, to say that I see all before me in love. When you have been attuned to the vibration of the word, in fact, and in fact you have been, if you have attended to our teachings, what you are doing is expressing the word in all that you see before you. You are expressing love as love, and the majesty that you bring forward is received by those ready to receive it. Say that again. Now, this is not just something that the individual does to change her own perception. When you have been attuned to the vibration of the word, and in fact you have been, if you have attended to our teachings, what you are doing is expressing the word in all you see before you. You are expressing love as love, and the majesty that you bring forward is received by those ready to receive it. In other words, we've been talking a lot about awareness, and I think that's tremendously important. but that if you have dedicated yourself and become willing to dedicate yourself to this work, whatever form it might take in your life, then you have become a deeper expression of love, even if you're not conscious of it. Now you benefit more deeply, and others benefit more deeply when you are consciously aware of that. But when you have dedicated yourself to this truth, which all of us have up until this point, is that you are still, even if you're not consciously aware of it, you are still allowing yourself to be an instrument of love and to be an instrument of peace. You know, you can take the St. Francis prayer, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. I would have to already be an instrument of peace for me to want more of that. If I am in chaos or in turmoil, the last thing I'm going to think about is make me an instrument of your peace. I'm going to be too wrapped up in my own stuff. I can't do that. There has to be at least a part of me, even if I'm not terribly consciously aware of it, that already is an instrument of God's peace, for me to be aware of going deeper into that. Like that wonderful prayer, Lord, I believe, help thou my unbelief. I believe, I don't believe as deeply as I could or as deeply as I think I ought to, but here's what I got. And Jesus said, that's fine, thank you. Thank you for being so honest with yourself and being so honest with me. Just be with that for a while. Be with that and it will increase itself. Thank you for sharing that, not as a judgment about yourself, but simply as an awareness. You don't even say, oh, Jesus, I'm a horrible, awful, terrible person because I don't believe as much as I think I should. No, here I am. Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief. And Jesus said, thank you. Thank you for your honesty. Thank you for your belief. Even if you allow yourself to be in that place of awareness, it will grow. It cannot not grow. Thank you.
Hey, Jerry.
Yo.
You know, that last part just resonated with me. It says, I just kind of changed you to, I am expressing love as love, and the majesty as I bring forth is received by those ready to receive it. So that when I read that, it clues me on that that's not an excuse for me not to always bring love and peace, but be mindful there are those who. And it's not a judgment, it's just, I guess maybe a discernment observation, who aren't there.
Right. They're where they are. Okay. And certainly there have been times in my life when I have not been a very good receptor of love. There have been a really down place and somebody goes, oh, what's the matter? You go, ah. Get away from me. I love you. Get away from me. Don't bother me. Don't touch me. Get out of my face. But the mere fact that I am still here and so are you means that even in those dark, difficult places where it seemed like we had no connection with love at all, that we really did. And I am not here to judge. I don't know how, you know, I could say, well, you're not ready to take in my love. That's not what this is about. People are going to be ready at their own level of being of receptiveness, right? And I am not privy to what that is or what that means or what that says. So my love, if it is unconditional, says, I will love you, not if or not love you because, not love you because you're, you know, you can receive it. I will love you, period, because you are worth loving. What you do with that is beyond me. I'm not in control of that one. And maybe you aren't either at this moment. So I don't want to make a judgment about here, but here it is. That's the best I can do with what I got. I will love you, not if and not because. We will say one thing, and it is very important. This is not a religion. We would never want that. This is an attendance to truth that may be known as and through you, and it is free to all, to everyone. You don't need a penny to claim the word as you. You simply need the intention and the willingness to go where you are called to go and to leave behind that leather bag, that bag of tricks that has gotten you through your life thus far, that is attended to in fear, collected out of necessity as a way to defend, as a way to achieve, as a way to feel yourself perceived by one or another. You are not your stuff. And your physical stuff is stuff. Your emotional stuff is stuff. And the stuff that you think you need, the ways of getting by, you don't need those as well. What is falling away is only what is no longer required. Do you understand this? We're not throwing away or letting go of anything of importance. What we are letting go of is what is no longer required, that we no longer need to be holding on to as part of your definition of who you are. So when you, here, I do this periodically, and you probably do this sometimes too, is you go over to your bookshelves and you start cleaning out some. Am I going to read that again? No. Maybe I haven't read it for the first, am I ever going to read that? No. Is it up there to impress somebody? Maybe. Okay. So, you know, start cleaning out my bookshelf. And what I'm doing is I'm not throwing away or giving away. I'm not throwing any of it away, but I'm not giving away anything of importance. I'm giving away some things that are no longer meaningful to me. It might not ever been meaningful to me. I might have thought they should have been. Oh, that's a book by Alan Watts. I should read that. So we're not, again, we're not saying, okay, let's burn all the books. Let's take care of let's not even get rid of, but let's take the ones that no longer serve you and maybe never served you. We'll put them in a box and take them to Half Price Books, and you can buy some other crap to fill up your shelf with. Stuff that you might never, you know, the best thing I ever did one time was that, you know, I used to have this one shelf of books that I was getting ready to read. They were on my have to do list. And every once in a while, when I would go book shopping or wandering around bookstores, you know, I would pick up one and say, oh, well, that looks good. And I would go over to my book, my have to read, and I would go to put it up on the shelf, and I already had a copy of it. That happened more than once. So we're not getting rid of, or let's not let the word getting rid of, we're not losing anything or letting go of anything that is still useful to you and me. We're letting go of what no longer serves me. And it's not like ripping off a piece of skin. Saying, you know, I'm just being a little bit more honest with myself. I'm saying, I'm not going to read that again. I know I'm not going to read that again. Or, you know, that looks interesting, but, you know, I've got other stuff that's much more interesting than that, and I know that will feed me much more spiritually than that one will. So, you know, let me let that go and give that to somebody else. It's okay. And so that's not just books are a metaphor here. That's going to be true for my patterns of behavior, my patterns of thought, my habits of thinking. So when a particular thought hits you, well, when that comes along, then I do this and this and this and this and this and this. In other words, that's what I'm supposed to do. So as soon as I walk into my office, the first thing I do is sit down and check my emails. Well, that's not who you are. What would happen if the first thing you went into your office is you said a prayer instead of checking your emails? Now, eventually, I will probably get around to checking my emails. But do I need to use that pattern of behavior as a definition of who I am? And I only do that, I only allow it to be a definition of who I am when that behavior or the habit is leading me around by the nose. I have to do it this way. Something bad will happen if I don't. Remember that old Rubbermaid commercial? This family goes up to their attic and they're looking around, there's crap all over the place. They say, boy, we got a lot of stuff. And they go out and they buy a bunch of these Rubbermaid containers and they pack up all the stuff. And now there's only one, now there's one corner that's filled with Rubbermaid containers and it's all this empty space now. And one of the kids says, we got to get more stuff. Oh, really? There have been times in my life when I have thinned down everything. I remember when I moved to South Dakota, I was working on the Indian reservation out there. Everything I owned was in this little van. Everything I owned. Came back after about a year or so, moved into my own place, started collecting crap again. One time when I was moving, I remember I had all of my utensils were packed up. I had a pot and a plate and a knife and a fork and a spoon. I lived on that for a week. You could do anything with a pot. You could fry eggs in a pot if you wanted to. And then now I got boxes and boxes full of silverware and china and this and that. And I got by on a pot and a knife and fork and spoon and a plate. Interesting. If there is something that you require in your history that is a benefit, you would never let it go. There is a reason you learned it in the first place. If you speak French, that comes in very handy in France. You learn that at a time, it is your information, it is not your history. A history is a frame. It is a way of perceiving the world based on external requirements or things that have happened to you that support you in holding a worldview that is not necessarily accurate. So it doesn't even say it's a lie or it's an untruth, it just says it's not necessarily accurate. So and I grew up with this one. You probably did too in different ways. Is, oh, you're Irish. Well, that means dot, 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 dot. It means you have a temper, it means you have a good, you know, sense of, you know, you love music, right? You're probably a good storyteller. You're probably gonna be a drunk when you grow up. All sorts of other things. They're all connected to my heritage. And I believe them. And I became a lot of those things. Because I thought that was the script. The script was already written. So I remember Margo used to get asked a lot because she's tall. What team do you play for? Because you're tall, you must play basketball. Who says? Who says? Oh. You have long hair and a beard, you must be a hippie. I remember when before Margo and I got married, I got my hair cut. And I remember her mom said, "Oh, thank God, my prayers have been answered." So what does my hair have to do with who I am?
You know, which is interesting, Jerry, when you know, obviously I'm tall too. I used to kind of mock when someone would ask the same question to me, and I look at them and says, "You know, I'm a jockey."
With big horses, right?
Right. You know,
Clydesdale.
So the laugh, and I remember years and years ago, I was, this is years ago, way before I was ever married, I was going out with this young lady, and we decided to go out on Super Bowl Sunday, and her brothers were, they played football, USC. And she said, "We're going out on Super Bowl Sunday. You okay with that?" And the brother said that to me when I went and picked up her sister. And I said, "You know, really, guys, I don't really have much interest in football." And they kind of looked at me like scratched her head, like, okay, guy going out with our sister, Super Bowl Sunday, not interested in football. What planet is he from?
Yeah, what's wrong with this picture, right? Because I have a picture. I have a frame in my mind of what you're supposed to fit into. And see, what's so beautiful about what we're doing here this morning. There's no have-tos. There's no judgment. There's no, oh, look at this, look at that. It's just here. It's like, oh, that's somebody going by this particular name or this particular energy. Not who you are. So all we're asking us to do today is become aware, maybe just one thing that you're doing out of unconsciousness. Well, I have to cook dinner and I have to do it this way. You know, again, one of the ways you're going to be able to find out that you've got a frame that you're fitting yourself into, right, is that that you've got prerequisites in your life. Well, I can only be happy if, or I can only go outside if this or if that or if this or if that. So if there's any what ifs like that in your life, stop for a minute and say, well, you know, do I really have to do it that way? Can I? And it might be uncomfortable. You know, if you've gotten used to putting on your coat, putting your right arm through first, and then your left arm, because it's a habit, right? And you try to do it differently next time, it's going to be a real pain in the neck. It's going to be annoying because, you know, first of all, you're going to forget. And then it's going to feel somewhat awkward of putting your left arm in there first rather than your right arm. And so when you're going through a new or a different kind of behavior or attitude, it's going to be a little bit awkward at times. It's going to be difficult at times. It might not be easy at times. So don't judge the awkwardness as being making it right or wrong. The awkwardness is just an obvious thing that comes about from doing something differently.
11 o'clock.
So let's just take a minute. We've got a few minutes to do a meditation here. So I'm going to mute.
Oh, right after that. Yeah.
Oops. Okay. Let's just take a minute. And put your stuff down for a moment. Remember, nobody came in late. You came in exactly when you were supposed to. You didn't miss anything. We were singing along with you, even if you didn't hear us. And as you sit there and allow yourself to breathe, Let your breathing breathe you. Don't even focus on your breathing. Just let it find its own rhythm. And let our simple prayer be to our higher self, our higher consciousness. Let me be aware of one item, physical thing, train of thought, contingency that I've made up in my own mind. Let me become aware of one of those that I can simply gently let go of today. That I can recognize it is not who I am. I don't have to do it this way, I can do it that way. I don't have to do it now, I can do it later. I can let go of the list in my mind for at least a couple of moments. And let us simply be open to that. And then to experience our connection with one another again. All of these physical beings, even though we're not in the same space, we're working towards the same goals. All of these beings that are surrounding us, these beings that don't have bodies, we can call them guides, we can call them angels. Who are gently and lovingly helping us move along. In love, in gratitude. Another deep breath and stretch a bit. Open your eyes when you're ready. A couple of reminders. Next week, there probably will be a password because Zoom is upgrading again. They're going to require a password. Password for this class is worth. Capital W-O-R-T-H. And please, if you care to, don't forget to send your donations, love offerings for this group to Unity of Louisville, 757 South Brook Street, 40203. Greatly appreciate that when or if you can. If by chance there's any time that you log on to our Sunday morning meeting and you have difficulty or I'm not here, just know that we've run into some problems that we couldn't correct right away, but we're working on them. So anybody else? And you can stay online for a couple of minutes if you want to. I know some people might want to be going to a church service or something like that.
Jerry?
Yeah. Yeah, if you'd like to stay on, please do. If not, we'll see you next week, okay? If you'd like to stay online, you can stay for a couple minutes. If you'd like to ask some questions or follow up on something, please feel free to do that.
I'm wondering if...
Yeah, Jill?
Hey, Jerry.
Oh, hey.
Jerry, I killed the baby Buddha. I put him in the dishwasher.
Jerry, I'm wondering if you could check with whoever the powers to be, if they could set up a PayPal.
Jill, I'm having a difficult time hearing you.
Jerry, can you hear me?
That's a little bit better, but your picture is kind of frozen.
Jerry, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you, I don't know, can you hear me?
Okay. I'll email you.
I'm sorry, somehow or another that connection's not making it. Okay. Well, thank you guys for being here, for you and for us and for one another. And unless you got something else, we'll see you next week, okay?
Thanks, Jerry.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jerry.
Live long and prosper.
Thank you, Jerry.
You're welcome.